You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Susan Lindauer. Susan is best known for her controversial book, Extreme Prejudice, which is her first-hand account of the terrifying story of the Patriot Act and the cover-ups of 9/11 and Iraq. Extreme Prejudice is an amazing testimony of ex-CIA asset Susan Lindauer's 5 years of legal troubles and 1 year in prison for daring to tell the truth. During the Bush era, the top controllers of the defense and national security wanted war with Iraq. They got their wish, and anyone who got in the way was dealt with severely, whether they violated a law or not. Susan was jailed under the Patriot Act, which amounted to summary punishment outside a verdict in a court of law. She was punished in jail without a trial. She has waited more than 10 years to tell this story, so let's welcome her to the show now. Hi, Susan. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is very controversial, and the government is still afraid of my story, as you have found out the hard way tonight trying to reach me.
Yes.
Some funny things happen on the phones, I tell you.
Yeah. Yes, well, we did have some technical difficulties, I admit. But at least we're getting you on the air live here to share your story. I know it's going to be difficult to sum up, you know, the experiences you had in such a short period of time, but maybe you could just briefly highlight what happened so that the listeners will have a better idea of what the Patriot Act means and what happened to you.
Absolutely. First of all, I was the chief asset for the CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency covering Iraq and Libya at the United Nations. And when the war started, the Bush administration desperately wanted to blame the intelligence community for its bad decision-making. And so they invented a story out of whole cloth for you. In fact, there was a peace option on the table that would have achieved every objective of the United States, including democracy reforms, cooperation with anti-terrorism, the weapons inspections, and also the United States was offered preferential contracts in telecommunications, healthcare, hospital equipment, pharmaceuticals, transportation. The Iraqis offered to buy 1 million American-manufactured automobiles and import them every year for 10 years.
Wow.
The United States would have had preference in oil contracts, oil equipment purchases, pipeline repairs, everything. The CIA was drawn. Yeah, it was wonderful. It was really great. If you think about the first Gulf War and the sanctions, there had been so much devastation to the Iraqi economy, this would have been a major peace bonanza on par with, you know, rebuilding Japan or Germany after World War II.
Uh-huh.
And so the United States wanted to collect as much of that as they could. And Saddam agreed to everything. He even agreed to step down.
Wow.
And that's something that people don't even understand. He just wanted to retire to a villa, and he was not going to take $1 billion with him. That's ridiculous. That is a lie. I know that because I'm the one who got the message. He would have stepped down. All he wanted was the equivalent of a Secret Service detail to watch over him in Tikrit, so that he could just, you know, have his villa and retire and be, you know, left alone. We would have had everything we wanted.
Well, it sounds like some of the players didn't agree with that agenda. Are we talking about Cheney and that group of the crowd with the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission and so on?
You've got it. The project for the New American Century,
yep,
called PNAC, was the worst of the offenders. And the tragedy was that we did know about 9/11. In my book, I go through how the 9/11 and the Iraqi stuff, you know, mixed together. I was the asset covering Iraq, and I was ordered to threaten the Iraqi government with war in the event that they discovered that intelligence on a conspiracy involving airplane hijackings and a strike on the World Trade Center specifically, and they didn't tell us. And I'm against war. See, this is where they got tripped up. They had an asset who was running this show, who was deeply, passionately opposed to war. And I was committed to, I'm opposed to terrorism, I'm opposed to violence, I am not a slackard, I am not lazy, I moved heaven and earth to try to stop this thing. I set up an email database for every chief of staff, every legislative director, every foreign policy advisor, every press secretary in the House and the Senate. I had an email data, a blast fax that went 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to every congressional office in the House and the Senate, in addition to the emails. And I also had a blast fax for the ambassadors at the United Nations. And I just raised as much heck as I possibly could. I made as much trouble as I could, trying to scream and shout, and, you know, shouting from the rooftops, don't do this. And I told them what the consequences would be. And every single thing I said has been true. And I was very precise about it, about what we expected. It was very negative. I told them that Iran would rise, that democracy would turn power to the Islamic fundamentalists away from moderate Arab governments. I told them the occupation would be brutal because the Iraqis, you know, 2 million Iraqis had died from the sanctions, and they would now be able to lay hands on their enemies. And I said, the Iraqi exiles are lying to you. I gave this information. Now, here's the thing. I gave the information to my own cousin, Andrew Card, who was the chief of staff to George Bush. And I also gave it to Secretary of State Colin Powell, who was the next-door neighbor of my CIA handler, Dr. Richard Fuse. So you can be sure that these people had the information. And they didn't want anybody to know they had the information.
Well, now, there's an interesting parallel, too, that you were involved with the original attack in 1993 on the World Trade Center, and some people infer that that might have been a dress rehearsal for the one in 9/11.
Absolutely, it was. And it was also infiltrated by the FBI.
Yeah.
I am not allowed to give too much information about that case, except that it was, for me, it was very dramatic. And I was not, at the time it happened, to be perfectly honest with you, I was 29 years old. I was not aware at the time. Now, I realize, in retrospect, we do know more, but my information did not come from the FBI. I was a young woman in Washington. I stumbled across something strange, and I had to tell somebody. And I went to the Tunisian embassy in Washington because I didn't know, because it was Yasser Arafat's embassy, and I didn't know where else to go. And later we found out that the FBI had infiltrated the conspiracy and was guiding it, providing technical assistance. But I was 29 years old. I didn't understand at that stage of my life that the FBI is actually, ever since 9/11, and you can pretty much count 9/11 in this too, the FBI has infiltrated every terrorist attack and has They have not infiltrated. They have created. Every attack since 9/11 has been created by the FBI. The FBI provides technical assistance. It recruits the individuals. It provides them with money and tells them how to do things. And here's an example of when they do it. Portland, Oregon, had refused to participate in a federal refused to submit a comprehensive anti-terror package for monitoring plan to the federal government. They said, this is ridiculous. So the FBI went out and recruited a Somali man to plant a car bomb next to the Christmas tree. The idea is that Islam is attacking Christianity, the symbol of Christianity being the Christmas tree. And so at Christmas time, the FBI recruited the guy, trained the guy, told the guy how to do it. They even set up, they got the car ready for him. They even saved him a parking place. Okay? You know, It's fairly offensive when you think about it. We have disenfranchised immigrant populations who now are suspicious of authority. They can't trust us. You know, and instead of adjusting happily to the United States, we create this animosity. It's very destructive to these communities. But the United States is doing it a lot.
Yeah, and you know, it does seem that that's becoming common knowledge now, that most people that are paying attention to the to news that's less filtered than the mainstream media are definitely aware of this. So it's not any surprise that all of these agencies are fragmented and isolated, and many of them are working against each other, and often without the other's knowledge. So it does seem to be a self-destructive kind of an expensive way to operate, but somebody must know what the end game is, and it seems to be destruction and annihilation of civilizations.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. The beneficiary of the Iraqi war was the military-industrial complex. It was Lockheed Martin, Blackwater, KBR, the mercenary groups, the secure international security groups. They made out like thieves.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
American soldiers were, you know, I'm preaching to the choir.
Right.
But here's the thing: Iraq, you could have avoided the war and had every single thing you possibly could have imagined. The CIA was not lazy. It was not soft on Saddam. Nobody was being. I mean, I was anti-sanctioned. I was anti-war. I really wanted to help end the sanctions for the Iraqi people. But my CIA handler and my defense intelligence handler were ferocious people. They were like, get everything. Take it all. Don't leave anything, you know. Nothing. Leave nothing on the table. If it's possible for us to take it, we want it.
Yeah.
And I mean, honestly, that was their attitude. And the thing is, it used to be possible for the United States to dictate to the world community. I don't think Americans really understand the change that has now happened. We used to be able to tell people what we wanted, and we would expect them to acquiesce to us, and pretty much, if you wanted peace with America, it would be on our terms. And, you know, we didn't want the United, our demands on Iraq far exceeded the Security Council, and it didn't matter. But here's the, so here's what happens. The war, after the first year, the war is already going badly. The occupation is going badly. They thought that they'd won there. Now George Bush is facing re-election with John Kerry, and he decides that, you know, he doesn't want anybody to really take responsibility for what he's done to this country. So I had requested to testify on Capitol Hill, and we have this on tape. Here's the thing. Because of the Patriot Act, it's all recorded. And I'm going to actually put these phone calls out on the internet, because I think that people have a right to hear this stuff and really understand it. But it was I called Trent Lott's office and asked. He was part of the Commission on Iraqi Pre-War Intelligence, and I requested to testify. 30 days later, after I requested to testify through proper channels. Now, all of you know Bradley Manning. Poor Bradley Manning, whom I love. I feel like he's my little brother. He's accused of just going straight to the media and telling everybody outright. They arrested him they've done horrible things are happening to him. I was exactly the opposite. I did it the proper way. And so people say, well, why did you do that? And it's like, because that's what you're supposed to do. I knew the ropes. I took the proper way. 30 days later, they come and arrest me. For 5 years, I'm held under indictment on the Patriot Act. I'm locked up in Carswell Air Force Base for a year while the Justice Department argues that I should be detained indefinitely up to 10 years.
Mm.
10 years!
Wow.
With no trial or hearing. Okay? They just want to lock me up, throw away the key. And on top of that, because I keep saying, well, I was a U.S. intelligence asset, they said, well, we need to drug this woman. They actually petitioned the court to forcibly drug me with injections of Haldol, Ativan, and Prozac.
Ooh.
So that I could be chemically lobotomized.
Yeah.
Until I could be cured of knowing the facts about 9/11 in Iraq. And the judge in my case was also hearing Larry Silverstein's insurance claims for the 9/11 build of the World Trade Center towers, which were worth billions of dollars. And so here I am in one courtroom, and we'd have our hearings like before I got sent to prison. We'd have status meetings one after the other, and I'd be going, they'd be coming out, and I'd be going in.
Wow.
And they'd be coming out, and I'd be going in saying, "Hey, Your Honor, we knew about 9/11," and the judge's department was like, "Shut up, shut up, shut up." And I'm like, "No, he needs to know we knew about 9/11." And I even offered to waive my Fifth Amendment rights to testify in front of the 9/11 Commission.
Wow.
So that you could hear the truth. You would know the facts.
Yeah.
You know, and then you'd have the full information that I was capable of giving you.
Wow.
For better or worse, you'd know.
Yep.
So.
Well, unfortunately, we don't get to hear the truth very often, do we?
No. No, you don't. And tonight it was an example of how the government, BBS must have some pretty powerful listeners, because they it's a compliment when they try to stop you from speaking to me. It is, and it doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen when radio interviews get, when you phone into the ether, and I'm standing here listening waiting by my phone, and it happens. But you can see why. The Patriot Act. Sorry, I'm like talking your ear off. But there's so much to say. Please, everybody, read my book, Extreme Prejudice: The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-ups of 9/11 in Iraq. We're just scratching the surface here.
Well, yeah, and Susan, there have been subsequent laws that have fortified the Patriot Act, which allow the government to pick up anybody off the streets without a trial and send them anywhere.
That's right.
If it was that bad for you back then when you had your experiences and it was no picnic, it's at least 100 times worse now for the average American citizen. And isn't that what you're trying to tell us, is that this can happen to anybody?
Absolutely, it can happen, and it's going to happen.
And it will happen.
To happen soon. I'm very concerned about this for all of America, and I think that to give you an idea, the difference between the Patriot Act and the military detentions on the NDAA, there's one critical difference, and that is you have a judge. In my case, I had a court when I had Judge Muir Casey. So when they were giving me a hard time, I was writing letters to my judge. I was demanding my rights to due process. Ultimately, even though for 5 years they refused to give me a trial, but ultimately at least they had to free me, because I was like, I refuse to back down. I demand my day in court. I demand the right to call witnesses. You're violating the Constitution, and I'm going to fight this all the way to the Supreme Court. If you don't, you know, you're going to hold me in prison, then you're going to have to give me a trial. And even if you release me, I kept demanding it. I never gave up my rights, ever. And I was very vocal about it. But the difference is that under NDAA, there's no judge. So, for example, what that means is when my uncle, who is an attorney, so he's family and an attorney, he's tough, he's Armani suit tough, he's a good corporate lawyer, businessman, but he's not businessman, he's an attorney. But he's not like a hippie. Okay? He's not in dreadlocks. He's not in jeans. He's in a three-piece suit.
Okay,
I'm in jeans, but he's not. And he shows up at the military base and demands to see me. They told him that there was no prison on the military base, and I was not an inmate at the non-existent prison. Now this, and he pulled out the papers from the judge. He said, "Well, actually, here are the letters from Susan, from your prison, and here's the judge's order committing her here, demanding that she surrender here. So you're wrong. I want to go in to see her, and I'm on her guest visitors list, And we filed the paperwork. Here's my attorney paperwork. He had everything. He's an attorney. He's a good attorney. He's an amazing attorney. He knew what to do, and he was prepared. He didn't come in unprepared. He'd done everything, all due diligence. They refused to let him onto the base. He drove 700 miles in each direction so he could think, clear his head and think. They wouldn't let him onto the base, refused to acknowledge the prison was there. The second time he did this, they said, yeah, there's a prison here, but there's no visiting hours on the weekends. Meanwhile, other family members are going around him, and they're going straight in. And they're like, nope, you are not going in. You are not coming into this base. Because I was on the Patriot Act. And the military was like, we're not going to let her have an attorney visit. That's just too bad. And this is what NDAA is going to be like. This is really scary stuff. Now, in the case of a judge, because we had New Casey, we had a court. So when the military said, you're not coming in, my uncle attorney went to Mukasey and said, we demand that you have U.S. Marshals standing by to let me into that base. We demand it. That is our right. This is a matter of the Constitution, and you are required to uphold the Constitution. And so they did. The third time he came to see me, there were four U.S. Marshals flanking him at the base. And they stood there, and they're like, if you don't let us in, we're calling the judge, and this is going to be, and we are crossing over your base. We are crossing into your base. This is a constitutional crisis right now. And you, if you deny us this, you are, you know, this is going to be, this is, you don't want to do this. And so they let him, they let Ted in. They finally, on the third visit, let him in. But imagine, in the NDAA, your wife, your daughter, your husband, your son disappears in the middle of the night, and you're a family member, and you're not Ted Lindauer. You're just trying to figure out where your husband's gone or where your wife's gone. You know, maybe you've got a single mother, and you're a 10-year-old, and you have to go to school the next morning and tell your teacher, well, somebody came and took my mommy last night. Help me. And then the teacher's trying to figure out where you've gone to. I mean, this is scary stuff. And the military's like, well, we don't have to tell you where that mother is. We don't have to tell you where your mother is. Or maybe they know you have a kid, so your kid disappears as well. I mean, this is real. This is how it's going to happen. They're going to come. They're going to take you in the middle of the night. Some child protective services is going to grab your kid. You're never going to know where each other are. This is really scary stuff. I don't think that people really understand. And it's not future. It's not as futuristic as you think. This could happen in the next 12 months. 12 to 18 months is when it's going to start. They're already doing stuff to get ready.
Well, what do you see as the next major event on the horizon? Does it appear to be more false flag events or... There's a lot of saber rattling about war with Iran again.
Yes. I think that the two great fears, of course, are war with Iran and another false flag terrorist event like 9/11, except at this time it will be a miniature thermonuclear device. It's like a dirty suitcase bomb. In the south of Manhattan, and we have always known that. This is now, when I say that to you, that is the prediction of the type of attack that it is. I'm not revealing to you in specific intelligence. It's just common sense. They have to ratchet it up from 9/11, and that's the kind of thing that will do it.
The purpose would be to keep us mired in turmoil and committed to wars and keeping the war machinery going, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for a long time, I thought that the real danger would be before the election. But I think that I don't think the danger level will drop after the election because they're going to have a new president. We'll see who is the next president. We'll see if Obama. It's impossible to know if Obama will win or if Romney will win. But if there's a new president, Romney, there is much more likelihood of being able to push him into war with Iran. And he will want to reward his military industrial supporters. He is beholden, because of Citizens United, he's beholden to... he's not beholden to the American citizens, the American people. He's beholden to big business. And big business is going to profit from this. So that's where they're going to be at. That's what they're
right.
going to be going for.
Right. And
I think that at that point there's going to be real danger, because they will easily use another false flag attack to, you know, to push another Pearl Harbor Day, to push the United States away from its opposition, the people of the United States, away from opposition to war. And they'll say, look what they did to us. We have to get them. And it's going to, and at the same time, they will crack down on the dissidents. Those of us who speak against the war, we will be shut up.
Mm.
We will be silenced. And
well, that's already happened. That's already happening. I mean, the mainstream media is so well controlled that there's not a peep from a hummingbird that gets on there that isn't scripted.
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So we know what the signs are. The signs are ramping up the war fervor and the accusations, getting the people who are gullible and dumbed down fired up, so that they believe that there is an enemy to the perceive. And then they just go ahead and do what they want to do. So this has been their modus operandi since the beginning of time. They've done it dozens of times. We've seen it over and over. It seems like we ought to be able to recognize these signs as they're happening, and we can see them happening right now.
Exactly. Some of the stuff that's coming out is very scary. We had on New Year's Eve, we had the military detentions at NDAA approved by a Democrat in the White House. Unbelievable. Then
yeah.
we had in March the peacetime martial law in March 16th that he signed. Peacetime martial law that allows him to seize food production, transportation, energy, private business, and divert all resources towards U.S. government war. Mostly war defenses, military uses. And then you have right now a new manual. This has just come out in the past few days, a new manual on how dissidents in these camps will be indoctrinated for re-education, and that how they will subject these people to psyops for re-education purposes, so that they can be trained to understand that America is really, you know, arresting you and throwing you in prison is for your own benefit. And how to separate
right.
out the troublemakers and the leaders who are going to, you know, cause problems for the government. And it's just crazy. It's really scary to see. Alex Jones did something on that. I'm shocked to see it. But it
yeah.
means that this is much farther along than we had thought, and we are moving rapidly towards fascism.
Oh, yeah, there's no question
about
it.
They don't care about the Constitution at all.
Yep. Yep.
And that indicates there will be another false flag operation, too. Because,
yeah.
you know, this should be sci-fi. This is like futuristic, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie kind of stuff.
It's getting there, isn't it? Isn't it? And the technology that's held secretly and privately is beyond belief. It probably rivals that of the Star Trek movies.
And we're moving into a stage of constant surveillance and constant controls, and, you know, the strange, you know, things that shouldn't happen are happening. So.
Well, now, what do you consider the most important, I guess you could say, accomplishment in this whole experience that you had that caused you to write the book? What is the one thing that you can point to that you would say you're most proud of, the information that you got out?
Well, I'll tell you something. I am so, I don't know if proud is the right word. I think it's so important for people to know that peace and diplomacy and engagement can achieve results in the most intractable situations. Everyone presumed before the war that, dialogue had failed, and there was, you know, the government wanted to persuade us that war was the only way forward. I think that it's critical at this moment for people, for Americans and the world community to know that, dialogue absolutely achieved results, really good, strong results that would have solved all of our problems and would have given us what we needed, what we really needed most, without exception. We could have had everything we wanted, and that's the thing. That's the deal. That I think people urgently need to know right now, because we're giving up on dialogue and we can't. We shouldn't. We don't have to. And I hope that I'm proud of my own resilience for my own self, because these people beat me within inches of my life. I was supposed to be dead. I was supposed to be down and out and never to rise again, never to be heard from again. And if they think that, and there's a moral to the story, because if you think that indoctrination is going to work in these camps, that absolutely, that is a huge mistake. Absolutely, it's going to fail. You are only going to enrage the population, and those of us who are locked up will hate you forever for it, and we'll never trust the government again, and we will come out of it, and we will fight you harder. I haven't stopped talking, as you can tell.
right.
I just am fighting. I'm fighting back. But they made up a story that I was a religious maniac. And I do believe in God. For all of you out there, I do definitely have a rock solid faith in God. Totally.
Well, I've known some maniacs that believe in God, so I'm not so sure that's a prescription for sanity.
there you go. But the thing is that they tried to make it sound like I was, you know, this religious maniac.
Right. No, like, clearly, yeah. You know what you're talking about.
I was like spouting Bible verse every 30 seconds uncontrollably.
That I
was rendered incompetent by my faith in God. And that's just the silliest thing in the world, because honestly, for those of you who are not religious, don't worry about it. I mean, I am so libertarian, truly libertarian, that if you, whatever your values are, I respect your values. I respect people from having differences in opinion, and I don't worry about that. The only thing I worry about is that people are attacking me for my choices. If I'm not bothering anybody else, they shouldn't be bothering me. And that's kind of my attitude.
And it does seem like it's time for all of us to start thinking about peaceful means and to get along with each other and stop stirring up the pot. There's so much money involved and so much profit involved with the war industry and with people continuing to develop arms that... It's become a self-perpetuating doom scenario. We can't continue this. We have to be able to convert from a wartime economy, we never have, to a peaceful economy. And that means, that includes getting rid of nuclear power and all the rest of it, and releasing some of the free technologies which have existed for decades that are on the books, which major corporations have held on to, and have not allowed us to have, because it would destroy the golden egg of oil, electricity, fracking, and the rest of it, which is destroying the planet. So all of these games must come to an end. So people like you need to be speaking out, and people need to be thinking in terms of peace and not accepting anything less than being able to get along with our brothers and sisters all over the world, regardless of race, color, or creed.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, the peace that we negotiated was a strong peace. The hardcore conservatives would not have accomplished, not you, but I mean,
right.
all facets of America, whether you're a peace activist or whether you're, you know, tough on terrorism and tough on, you know, demanding goods for America. I mean, we were going to get everything we wanted. They were going to give us democracy. They had a great plan for democracy.
Wow.
In my book, I go through it. The Iraqis themselves, and this is the thing, when you engage in dialogue, if you treat each other with a modicum of respect, you may find that they have some really good ideas, too, and this is one of them. And let me share it with you. They wanted to have the Iraqi exiles return to Baghdad living in expanded embassy compounds. Because embassies are considered the sovereign territory of the home country. And they would have been protected by embassy security. And as Saddam and the diplomats and the, you know, the Revolutionary Council folks that I talked to said, embassies are sovereign territory. If we were to attack the Jordanian embassy, it would be an act of war on Jordan. It would be impossible to do. Therefore, any of these Iraqi exiles that are staying at the Jordanian embassy are expressly protected.
Mm-hmm.
And they said this would be a great way. They could bring everybody back. They offered to let them set up diversified parties. So there would be the Ba'ath party, but then they would also have their parties. And they would be allowed to have party headquarters, party newspapers. They would be allowed to have meetings with the public and give speeches and have a debate in the society. And then Saddam was like, you know, Saddam may not be there because really Saddam just wants to retire. Saddam just wants to really go off and live in a villa, and he just wants to have Secret Service. You know, they said, you know, your president has Secret Service protection when he's retired, and Saddam wants to have Secret Service protection when he retires. He just wants to have a contingent of security guards. He just wants to go retire. I mean, heavens, how could you be upset about that?
Well, it's too bad that saner minds did not prevail in this case, and peace, and the peace that you're talking about that was available to us wasn't taken. Now, we're almost at the end of the hour, so I thought I'd ask you if there's anything you'd like the listeners to know before we sign off. And then make sure, please, that you mention your website and the name of your book again.
My book is Extreme Prejudice, The Terrifying Story of the Patriot Act and the Cover-Ups of 9/11 in Iraq. 9/11 is part of it. Iraq, it really shows how the whole thing fits together. So don't be intimidated if you're not part of the 9/11 truth community. You'll learn something from this book. The second half is about the Patriot Act, and you'll learn a lot. You are not nearly as scared, not you, Lance, but everybody, your listening audience is not nearly as scared as you should be. Our America is changing, and we have got to defend it right now and save it. Also, let's give our prayers to Bradley Manning, who is right now fighting against a life sentence for telling the truth. Truth is not treason. Telling the truth cannot be allowed to become treason. And I hope that all of you will consider supporting him.
I totally agree with you, and I thank you for mentioning that, Susan. Do you have a website, Susan, where people can find you?
Yes, extremeprejudiceusa.wordpress.com.
Wonderful. Well, Susan, we got off to a late start, but we had a great chat, and I'm so glad I got a chance to get you on the air to share your story with us and to get people inspired to get your book and find out more about it. So thank you so much
thank
for being on the
much.
Show tonight.
Okay? Thanks a lot.
All right. Good
Goodbye.
Night, Susan. Good night, everybody.